The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
BBC Radio 1 DJ Annie Mack, good afternoon.
Hiya, Brendan. Great to be here.
And it's great to have you. And listen, congratulations on your, you've just released your debut novel, Mother, Mother. I notice it's written under your full name, Annie McManus. Are you started transitioning to grown-uphood, is it?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, yeah, it's not really a change of name. It's more just a reclamation of the full name.
Yeah.
The Annie Mac was an abbreviation ages ago when I first got my show on the BBC by my boss, and I don't know, I think in the back of my mind I always intended on going to my full name, and the book felt like a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. You never let them take away your name, Annie. And listen, you're also leaving the BBC mm-hmm. BBC Radio 1 anyway after 17 years. And some people listening might not get what a big deal that is, but you are a huge name there, and you're a huge name on the kind of international superstar DJ circuit. So are you kind of moving into a new phase of life now and settling down a little bit?
I guess it's definitely a new phase of working life. There's a couple of different reasons for why I decided to duck out. The shows I did on Radio 1 were from 6 p.m. every day across the week. So with young kids, it wasn't ideal in terms of, you know, just not being around in the evenings for them. And they're both going to be in school from September. So that was a kind of an easy like decision to make on that. I've been doing the show for 6 years. I'm definitely not going to leave radio. Like my intention is to just take a little break from radio and reassess, get some perspective, and then hopefully come back when I can find the right show to come back to.
Okay. And then in terms of, obviously, you're a big name on the kind of international DJ circuit as well, which I presume means being away from home a lot and late nights and all that. So do the kids kind of cramp your style as well then as a rave queen?
Yes, they do. I mean, any parent will tell you that raving and children are not friends.
Yeah.
The lifestyle, like even just the times of working are not very good for having babies and kids. So, I mean, I'm still doing it. And, you know, anyone who knows about COVID will know that any sort of live events or DJing or music events have just fallen off the edge of a cliff in the last year. So there is some gigs coming back in now. The calendar is starting to fill up again for the end of this year, and that feels really optimistic and definitely not something I want to miss out on. So I will be back DJing at festivals, DJing at nightclubs.
Yeah. So will that be towards the end of the summer over in the UK? Yeah.
So the first show I have back is actually Manchester Gay Pride, and that is the bank holiday weekend in August, the last weekend in August. And that feels kind of optimistic to me. It feels feasible to me that mm-hmm. that could happen. Yeah.
Okay. Listen, if we go back first, maybe, because you started out, I'm getting the sense of a kind of an indie kid knocking around Dundrum, lots of music mm-hmm. in the house and that.
Yeah, that would be right. I grew up in Dundrum and had a load of big brothers and sisters and was very influenced by what they were listening to, of course, as you do. Played a load of instruments and didn't really discover dance music and clubbing until I left Dublin for Belfast and went to Queen's University. And that's where I really fell in love with the music and the culture.
And tell me a bit about that time.
It was just really transformative. You know, your typical university experience, you're leaving home, you're figuring out who you are, you're learning how to cook and to, you know, look after yourself, doing loads of different waitressing jobs in bars and sandwich shops and studying English literature. So, you know, reading loads of books and just feeling very inspired. And at the same time, discovered a nightclub called Shine at the weekends, which is an iconic nightclub in Belfast for kind of techno music and house music, and ended up working there. So really got to see these DJs playing and kind of, you know, seeing their craft at close range, and really fell in love with it, I suppose.
And what do you think, what was it about dance music that kind of made you think, yeah, this is it for me?
I think it's just, it felt really new and really exciting. Yeah. Like my brothers and sisters were very into kind of rock music and traditional Irish music and pop music, but the dance music kind of felt like my own personal discovery, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And also the social side of it, you know, there was such a community around it. Again, the friends that I had at Shine were very different than the people that I lived with or anything like that. It felt like my own kind of, my own personal community of friends. And then the DJs themselves, just like seeing how you can move a room and seeing how you can take this crowd of people, a densely filled room, on this journey, and kind of seeing the skill that's involved in DJing, you know, the timing of playing certain records in certain places in the set, the kind of tension you can create, the release and tension, all of that. The more you kind of delve into it, the more you see how much of a skill and a craft it can actually be. And of course, the music itself, I just found really exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there about that the friends you made there were different to the kind of people you lived with. I think that was one thing about dance music as a youth culture, that it tended to cross class boundaries in a way, didn't it? Mm-hmm. It put a lot of people into situations they mightn't have been in otherwise, with people they might never have met otherwise.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I mean, when Acid House began in the late 80s, you know, that was a real big part of it. You know, it was people from all walks of life, you know, football hooligans kind of making friends with kind of bohemian hippies and travelers and just anyone, any race, class of people. It felt very exciting for that.
And then you went to the UK, and like, you were kind of knocking around the music industry and DJing a bit there, but it seemed Radio 1 was always the place you wanted to be, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I heard Radio 1 properly for the first time when I moved to Belfast, and I was listening to those late night kind of alternative music shows, your John Peel's, a woman called Marianne Hobbs. And that was really exciting to me, these shows. I'd never heard those type of radio shows before, or hadn't been exposed to them anyway when I was living in Dublin. So when I heard them, it was kind of, for me, it was a very basic equation of, okay, I know I love music, I know I love people and connecting with people. So if I put those two things together, you get talking on the radio about music. It was that basic. Mm. And I finished my degree and tried to do a few different things in Belfast, you know, BBC Northern Ireland, and couldn't quite find the right thing there. So took myself off to London, which was attractive anyway, because my brother was living there. He was in a rock band. I could go live with him, which I did. So, yeah, I was quite starry-eyed for London. I was excited about that.
And of course, one of the knock-ons then, the pleasant knock-ons of getting into BBC Radio 1, I suppose, is that, does that kind of catapult you in at a very high level in the live DJ circuit then? Because you obviously become a very well-known name. And like, it sounds like an amazing kind of life. You know, you're out playing those venues in Ibiza that we all hear about, and playing big festivals and everything.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. The BBC is such a credible platform when it comes to music. And when I did secure a weekly show, that was, I mean, I was DJing on a very amateur level at that point. But when I got that weekly show, that's when the professional gigs started coming in. And, you know, you have to get yourself an agent and you're traveling around the country. And I did that for a good kind of 4 or 5 years on my own. Just traveling about, maybe bringing a friend now and again. Then it kind of elevated to doing American tours, Australia tours, going around Europe. Like, the BBC is a global institution. And that was one of the things you learn, you know, when you travel around the world and you meet different people and you do kind of these type of interviews in different places, is how much respect people have for the BBC as a place, and how much kind of interest there is and curiosity there is for the people that work there. So I realized in doing that, it's quite unique in that it's a place where you can really, you know, that idea of having total autonomy over what you play on a show, which I just pretty much took for granted, I realized actually this is not as common as you would think, and people value that, I suppose, on a global level. So yeah, it very much helped my DJ career.
I'm wondering though, does it also mean then that if you're out there and you're kind of representing the BBC, that if you're 6 in the morning in Ibiza, you have to keep a hand on yourself because you're always have to remember, I'm here for the BBC.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, BBC events, you would probably do that. Yeah. But when you're DJing kind of apart from them, you don't have to. I mean, there's always the standard thing for when you work for the BBC, you know, on your Twitter byline, these are my views and not the views of the BBC. Yeah. But there's a constant kind of awareness when you work for the BBC of being kind of publicly opinionated in any way. You have to be quite careful with that because people are very quick to try and catch you out on those type of things.
Yeah, you must have had some fantastic times traveling around, did you?
Oh my God.
Like,
yeah,
what were the highlights for you?
Incredible times. I think probably the early tours, you know, going around America. I mean, I look back now and I'm thinking, God, you know, if I had a daughter, I don't know if I would be happy with her doing those things. But I mean, I was in my late 20s. I was going to America on my own, traveling around from Philadelphia to wherever, New York to Boston to over the East Coast as well. And just hopping off planes and meeting promoters and going to play in clubs. And you'd be paid in cash, like crumpled dollars, yeah, at the end of the night. And it was such an adventure. It was just such an exciting adventure, this idea of traveling around. And everywhere you go, people knowing your shows and knowing where you were and people being able to kind of quote your radio jingles back at you word for word. You know, just such a revelation. So those beginning years, I think, were, I'll never forget.
Yeah. So now, look, people hearing all that might have expectations of your novel, Mother, Mother, but it really is not remotely what you would expect. You know, it's not a celebrity kind of novel. It's not based on that lifestyle or anything. It's quite a serious, thoughtful kind of literary novel.
Yeah, I guess so. My friend called it a lyrical thriller, which I thought was good because I didn't even realize I was writing a thriller type of book at the start until people started mentioning it as that. But yeah, it's really nothing to do with any of the career that I had. And in talking about it, I've kind of realized that it might be some sort of a reaction to that in a way. You know, the kind of, you know, not wanting to denigrate dance music or the culture, you know, it's an art form, it's something that should be valued in the same way as ballet or theatre or opera, in my opinion. But there is a kind of frivolous nature to it, I suppose. There's a kind of surface level nature to it sometimes. And I think for me, the idea of going and writing a book like this was very much maybe in reaction to my job never really challenging me at that level, and you know, in terms of thinking about those big uneasy themes, you know, like your griefs and your addictions and things like that.
And was the idea of writing a book or this book, was it nibbling away at you for years, or was there what was the moment that made you realize you were writing a book?
I turned 40, and as you know, when you have a milestone birthday, you are reminded of life hurtling by, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And I knew that I'd always wanted to write a novel. The 15 years previous had been so intense, so chaotic. And I'd just come out the back of having my second kid and kind of got clarity for the first time. I was starting to get sleep around then, and just really used it as a chance to do some soul searching and figure out what, you know, how I could do these things that I've always wanted to do. So I took on a writing course, which was really, really useful in that it helped me get the discipline I needed to just start putting pen to paper. It forced me to kind of deliver a word count every 3 weeks. And that was the beginning of the book.
And I see here, I quote, I published it under my real name, Annie McManus, in case the buying public wouldn't accept a literary venture from the person they took their first E to. So do you think you'd be bringing your dance music fans into the literary world with this? Or are you hoping to hit a new audience here who don't know about your misspent past?
I think it's a bit of both, you know. Yeah. Like, I don't want to like ever underestimate people or kind of put them in a place where, you know, if I love dance music and dance culture and I can write a book and want to write a book like this, then, you know, why shouldn't the fans who came to see me at Glastonbury or whatever want to read it too. And that's the hope, is that, you know, the thing about being around for this long is that the people who listened to me at the start have grown. And that's one of the most profound things about being on the radio every week, as you probably know, is that, you know, you have people who've been with you all the way through university, got married, having babies. They're sending videos of your their babies dancing to your music. You know, people grow with you. And I guess that's what I'm hoping, is that those people would want to be in, maybe curious to see what the book is.
So an old raver who settled down and wrote a book for old ravers who settled down and think it's time to read a book, maybe.
Maybe, but also young ravers too. Like, I'm quite excited by the idea of people reading their first fiction novel. You know, my husband, I was never a reader ever. And he read the first, like, this is the first fiction book he's read in, oh, God knows, like maybe since he left school. Like,
seriously?
So it was a big deal for him to read it. And I was so worried about asking him to, because I didn't want him to feel like the pressure, and I didn't want him to not like it, if you know what I mean. But he did, he read it, and now it's kind of turned a corner for him, and he's reading loads more off the back of it. So I'm delighted about that.
And your husband is a DJ and a music producer too. And is he kind of on a similar trajectory to you now with the kids and everything, that he's having to kind of reassess his life and career a little bit too?
Yeah, very much. Like, both of us, when we had our first kid, we were just kind of in the middle of this whirlwind of kind of traveling and touring and loud music and booming sound systems and just blagging it. We were both really chaotic. We'd always lose stuff. We'd be just like, it just chaos. And I think in the last year, since our second kid was born, in the last couple of years, we've really tried to make an effort to just be better and be more present and be around and be more organized. And so he's quit DJing. He never really enjoyed the kind of performative side of DJing anyway. He's a full-time music producer now. And he also left Radio 1.
Okay.
Citing just wanting to be around more for his kids as a reason. So we're both kind of in the same place.
And listen, such is the extent of your kind of successful focus on settling down, that there's a second book in the making, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stupid to be telling everyone about it, because I'm only like not even halfway through, but I kind of started writing in a reactive way to Mother, in that I tried to write about things a little bit more loosely, you know, that I've gone through myself. So it's more of a coming of age novel about a young one from Ireland moving to London, basically. So that's where I'm at so far, and I'm really enjoying it. I can't wait to get stuck back in, to be honest.
Okay, so you're on the treadmill now, Annie. It'll be a book a year they'll want from you now, and you'll be promoting one while you're writing the next one, and on it goes. You must still know a lot of people who are out clubbing regularly and everything. How have they been getting on during the pandemic? What have they been doing to feed their addiction?
At the moment, the people I know who just live for it, there is still venues over here in London and in England where you can go and see dance music, but you have to be sat down around a table. So it kind of defeats the purpose, but they're still going, and still going to see DJs, and DJs are still getting a chance to play. The other thing that's been big is DJs just streaming their DJ sets from various places, and people just kind of getting their fix of dance music that way.
Okay, so clubbing will survive.
Clubbing will survive. I think it will come back absolutely stronger than ever. I think once it's safe, once festival organisers are insured and feel like they can put on festivals with the support that they have, that they need, I think people will bounce back so quickly, much quicker than we think, and it will be flying as soon as it's safe to do that.
Okay, Annie McManus, thank you very much. And the novel is called Mother, and it's super, and it's out now. Thanks, Annie.
Brendan, thank you so much.